In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents a show about everything. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the unforgettable, ever-insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real-life journeys, as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live, always remembering Life Changes. This is radio like you've never felt before, with tonight's special guest, best-selling author and the internationally renowned Greg Braden. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I say a lot of times that I'm excited about a show. And this day, today, I am excited. But in actuality, I am excited for you. I'm excited for the audience because Greg Braden is our guest. Now, I'm excited to be interviewing him, but I know how I felt when I first discovered Greg Braden and when I first discovered his work and when it sunk in. It was an overwhelming feeling for me personally, and I'll share it. Our producer, Dorothy Donahue, when she used to come visit with me, she brought a book once, and it was called Walking Between the Worlds, The Science of Compassion, author Greg Braden. And she put the book on my kitchen table and said, you have to read this. Well, I don't know when it was that she came to visit again, and she saw the book on my kitchen table, exactly where she had placed it. So she picked up the book and she put it on my dining room table. And she said, you have to read this, and placed it there. From there, the next time she visited, she put it on my coffee table. From there, the next time she visited, she put it on top of my books, a stack of books on my nightstand. And there it sat. And then I was going on a trip, and I needed a book to take with me, and I saw that book, and I said, okay, Dorothy Donahue, I'll take it. And I grabbed the book, and I put it in my suitcase, and I left. Well, it was the first book I picked up on the plane, and I started reading it, and all of a sudden, I couldn't put it down. And all of a sudden, I start crying. It hit me. Just my heart. I mean, the science of compassion, walking between the worlds. It said so much to me. And I was thinking, why? Why is this speaking to me? And there are many reasons. You may learn through this show or other shows that Greg, he was a computer geologist for Phillips Petroleum. He was a senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta Defense Systems. He was the first technical operations manager for Cisco Systems. To me, having been an engineer, having worked with IBM and for IBM for many years, I knew people like this. I saw how they worked. And for a while I was a salesman at IBM. I couldn't convince them of something. They knew more than I did. And I learned from them as they showed me how our computers worked and why they wanted them, actually. It's not that they didn't want them, but it's what I knew wasn't what they knew. Their mind worked at a whole different level. And I was always fascinated by people like him. And I always was even more fascinated by the people like him that knew how to be able to speak to people like me, who had a scientific mind, but who also were emotional and got into the psychology of that. All of a sudden, I found one of these men, but he wasn't talking about computers or engineering or science per se. He was talking about the heart, at least in this book. He also talks about science, of course, but he was talking about the heart. And to have a scientist know this stuff and be able to speak to it scientifically and also connect to my heart, I think that's what made me emotional, but it probably was the material and how it was resonating with me. And so that's why I'm excited, because I hope my dream for you is that you can get as excited as I did, that this show could be that book that made it from the kitchen table to the dining room table to the coffee table, finally into my hands and into my heart. Like it happened for me. So may this be the show for you, that you discover Greg Braden and his work, and we're going to be talking to him right after this.
Clean water is not enough.
reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWay's ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWay's water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWay's water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Greg Braden, who is, of course, a New Yorker. For more than 25 years, Greg has searched high mountains, villages, remote monasteries, and forgotten texts to uncover their timeless secrets. His work is now featured on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, ABC, NBC, and on Life Changes with Filippo. To date, Greg's discoveries have led to such paradigm-shattering books as The Isaiah Effect, The God Code, The Divine Matrix, and Fractal Time, which debuted in 2009 at number 5 on the New York Times best-selling list in just 2 weeks after its release. His newest books just came out last year, Deep Truth, Igniting the Origin of Our Origin, History, Destiny, and Fate. Today, Greg's work is published in 17 languages and 33 countries and shows us beyond any reasonable doubt that the key to our future lies in the wisdom of our past. I welcome Greg Braden to our show.
Filippo, it is so good to be with you today. I'm thrilled to be on your program. I'm honored to be with your audience, and what a beautiful introduction. I'm not sure where we're going to go after that.
I'll tell you exactly.
Walking between the worlds, it's interesting to hear you talk about that. A lot of people don't know anything about that book. It was self-published. It's out of print. It was written in the late 80s. It was published in the mid-90s, and it was just really heartening to hear your heartfelt experience with that book. So I want to thank you for sharing that with me and our listeners today.
Well, and thank you for writing it and self-publishing it. And I'll tell you where we're going to go with that. I shared how I discovered you. I want to know how you discovered Greg Braden.
I didn't have to look very far. You know, this... it's interesting to me. I was trained as a scientist. I worked in the corporations, some of the highest tech corporations of their time during the 1970s energy crisis with North Slope Oil in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, Phillips Petroleum, 1980s. Filippo, during one of the most frightening times in the history of our world, the last years of the Cold War, working in the defense industry with Martin Marietta Defense Systems, and then the information crisis of the early 90s, trying to get the different branches of the armed services, the armed forces, to be able to communicate with one another across a common computer system. And Cisco Systems happened to be the company I was working at when that technology was developed. So many people, they look at that background, they say, well, you know, how'd you get from there to what you're doing today?
Right.
Because for them, it looks like a great quantum leap is what the word people use often. And I guess I'm surprised. I was surprised first time I heard that, because for me, it was less of a leap and more of a logical progression. It simply made sense. I had been steeped in solving problems, big crises of our world. And as each crisis was very different from the others, there was a common theme that was underlying all of the crises. And the bottom line, Filippo, is that the crises are the result and the consequence of a way of thinking and implementing that thinking in our lives and our world today. And this is interesting to me. When I was in the corporations, there was a thinking that said we must make a choice between science or spirituality. The two are mutually incompatible. We have to choose one way of knowing or another. And my question was simply this: what if we married those two great ways of knowing into a single wisdom that is more than science can be alone, or more than spirituality can be alone? Because we all know science doesn't have all the answers. It's good. And science tells us the nuts and bolts of how things work, but it cannot tell us how to apply those things in our lives. Spiritual traditions are good, and the spiritual traditions can help us apply those things in our lives, but if we want to engineer them, they can't tell us how things work. So the bulk of my adult life has been dedicated to doing just that, to marrying the best science of our day, peer-reviewed science, the stuff we know that's true, with the wisdom of 5,000 years of our past, marrying that and meshing that into a wisdom that I believe gives us an edge over our ancestors. It gives us an evolutionary edge, not just to survive the crises of our time, but to transcend, to become better people, build better communities, and hopefully a better world as we gain these deeper understandings into ourselves. So for me, that is, it made perfect sense. I'm still an engineer. It's just an engineer of life and consciousness, mm-hmm. maybe, rather than bits, in a computer. And that helps, I think, for me to understand why I've made the choices I've made in my life. Now, I was raised in a very conservative community in northern Missouri in the Midwest. And the people didn't talk about God and science and spirituality. So I just always assumed everybody believed just like I did. They didn't talk about it, but I thought everybody believed that when we study science, when we study geology or chemistry or biology or physics or whatever we want to call it, what we're really doing is studying a facet of the workings of a greater power. And it wasn't until I got into the corporations that I understood that nothing could be further from the truth. So it's a long answer to a short question, but it's my way of following the progression to really get to the heart of transcending the great crises that face humankind today. And the only way I know to do that is to know ourselves. And that leads us a beautiful segue into everything we're going to do on this program.
Indeed. To know ourselves. Oh, that's all. So that was the problem, in a sense, that you set out to solve. And you have solved it in many ways. Your books seemingly have different ways of addressing this issue and several others. But there's actually a thread that runs through them, like the God Code, the Divine Matrix, the Spontaneous Healing of Belief, the Fractal Time, which just came out. There's a progression to this. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, sure. There is something called a hierarchy of thinking in our lives, in our world today, based on what are called the perennial questions of life. Every civilization asks, as different as the civilizations are from one another, there are basic questions that must be answered in life. And the questions are things like, where does life come from? And where do we come from? And how do we relate to our bodies? How do we relate to the world around us? How do we relate to our past? And how do we solve our problems? So we, this modern, sophisticated world that we live in today, for 150 years, since late 1800s, science has led us to believe a certain number of principles that answer those questions. And our lives, in large part, are based upon the way we think of ourselves based through this scientific lens. Our communities, the systems that we've grown to trust and rely upon in our world, the economic system, for example, the way we share resources, the way we create energy for our homes and for our families, the way we share medicine and fresh water, all of these things, they're based on a way of thinking that was developed over 150-plus years. And that way of thinking, the consequence of that way of thinking, has led to the great crises that we face today. How we deal with climate change, how we deal with shortages of energy, how do we feed 7 billion plus people, how do we deal with a global economic system that is collapsing as we're having this conversation right now. And what I began to understand, Filippo, is that if we attempt to solve the great crises of our time through the thinking that led to them, we know where that's going to go. new discoveries have now overturned many of those scientific assumptions. 150 years of scientific assumptions. New science is overturned and is giving us the true insights into our relationship with ourselves and our world. And you'd think that would be a good and welcome thing, but the reality is that there is a reluctance and in some cases an outright resistance to sharing these new discoveries in the mainstream. So mainstream media, documentaries on television, mainstream classrooms, mainstream textbooks, largely are not sharing these new discoveries, and there's a whole cadre of reasons as to why that is. But the bottom line for me is until we can embrace the deepest truths of our existence, we can't possibly make the kinds of decisions, the policies, pass the laws, and know who can represent this way of thinking in our political environment. We can't do that until we can really embrace the deepest truths of our existence. So that was why I shared the book, Deep Truth. Each book prior to that explores one of the facets of those perennial questions. So again, that's a long answer to a short question, but I want to lay all this out early on so we can tie into it as we go into our program today.
I really appreciate it. And of course, it begs the question, what are these deep truths?
Sure, and I'd love to share them. And, you know, one of the things I found, I mean, each of these deep truths could be, we could do an entire program.
Right, that's what I was just about to say.
On each one. So what I'd like to do, let me identify them quickly, and then we can dive into maybe one or two that are wreaking the greatest havoc in our world today. But even before I do that, I for some clarity, when I say that they're not being carried in the mainstream, and I talk about mainstream education, it's different in different countries. This is what I've found. But in the United States of America and largely in North America, in public classrooms, teachers are bound by a covenant that with the local school boards that determine what they can and cannot teach in their curricula. So until material is approved by the school board to be carried in the classroom, it cannot be taught. And the net result of that is that we are largely teaching false assumptions, obsolete science, to our young people. And they're now being steeped in the same thinking that led to the crises that we're facing today. And, of course, there are exceptions, and it's changing in some places. But what I want to say is it's not the teacher's fault. The teachers, many of them are aware of the new discoveries. They simply are bound by law. They cannot share them, those discoveries, until they are approved by the local school boards.
Wow.
So the five key assumptions, I'm going to go through them very quickly, and there are others. These are five that I've chosen that are really having a tremendous impact in our world today. The first one, I'll just list them quickly, and then we'll talk about them. The first one is a Darwinian assumption, Charles Darwin,
right.
1859. Proposed that evolution explains life in general and explains human life specifically. The problem with that is the new data, the new discoveries, and especially the discoveries in DNA, do not support Darwin's assumption. Darwin could not have possibly known in 1859 what we know today. I'm not blaming him. What I'm saying is there's a reluctance to let his ideas fall and be replaced by the new science. So that's the first assumption. The second is about civilization. We're led to believe that modern advanced civilization began about 5,000 years ago. That it's a one-time deal. It's linear. Began in the area of Mesopotamia, ancient Sumeria, and that we're at the pinnacle of that civilization today. Again, the problem is that the data simply does not support that. And I'll just cut to the bottom line. There are many instances that I could share. The bottom line is peer-reviewed archaeological evidence now of advanced civilization in Turkey is pushing the date of advanced civilization back into the end of the last ice age. Dates between 11 and 13,000 years for this advanced civilization called Göbekli Tepe.
Right.
It's rocking the world of historians because it's messing up all the timelines. It's not the only one. There are others as well, but this is the oldest so far. So now we know that advanced civilization is at least twice as old as we've been led to believe. And there are so many other examples, but they're not being carried in the classroom. Assumption number three, is that consciousness is somehow separate from our physical world. The problem with that is some of the best physicists, colleagues of Einstein's in the 20th century, said just the opposite. John Wheeler, Princeton University, died in 2008 before his death. His work was all based on the fact that consciousness is the stuff that the physical world emerges from, that we cannot separate us from the stuff around us. And number four is related. It says that the space between things is empty. We know there is no empty space. Everything is connected through fields of energy that we're only beginning to understand. Number five, another Darwinian assumption, in Darwin's words, that nature is based upon what he called survival of the strongest, later interpreted as survival of the fittest. The problem with that is the best science of the day is showing us that that flat out is not true. Nature is based on the model of what's called mutual aid and cooperation. And while competition, violent competition, does happen under some circumstances, it is an aberration of the true fundamental underlying law of nature. So when you put these all together, they paint a very, very different picture of our relationship to ourselves, to the world around us, to the past, and to the way we solve problems. Specifically, number five, that nature is based on survival of the strongest.
Right.
We've been led to believe that we live in this dog-eat-dog world, that we've got to fight for our slice of a single pie, and we've been steeped in the thinking of scarcity. Based upon that, the structures and the ways of life that are falling apart today, they're collapsing, Filippo, because they are no longer sustainable in the presence of the world that's changing, and they're no longer sustainable because they're based on false assumptions to begin with. So the collapsing of a global economic system, the way that we're sharing disappearing resources, vital resources like fresh water, food, medicine, the way that we work to solve the problems of climate change, as different as those problems are from one another, the way we solve them is all done through the lens of the way we think of our relationship to the world. And if we think that this is a world where we've got to fight and everything is a war to get something done, then that leads us in one direction. And if we recognize the fundamental laws of nature, of mutual aid and cooperation, it opens up a lot of doors to new ways of solving the problems that move us away from the thinking of the past. So I wanted to just go through those quickly, and then we can zero in on one or two that I think are wreaking the greatest havoc in our lives and our world today.
No, indeed, and that seemingly would wreak havoc if we were to believe in them, which is the irony, because we've been so trained to believe one thing. And I remember seeing you live several months ago, where you did a great talk on point number one about the Darwinian theory, and it all made so much sense. It was like the angels started singing and the skies opened up, and it's like, you know, this stuff just resonates. All of a sudden, it's like hearing music for the first time. Like, this sounds right. And so I am so glad we are sharing this with our audience today. I want to let everybody know, before we quickly go to a break here, that you can learn more about Greg and his schedule and his books. Of course, his books are available in bookstores and on Amazon, but you can go to www.gregbraden.com. And Greg is with two G's, actually three G's, GREGGBRADEN.com. That's Greg Braden. And we'll be talking to him more about all of this and the tipping point that he says we have either reached and hopefully have not tipped over on the wrong side, when we get back with Greg Braden right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
And I am Filippo, and we're back with Greg Braden. Dr. Wayne Dyer has said of him that he's brilliant and insightful. He sees Greg Braden as one of our great visionaries. Dr. Deepak Chopra has said, Greg Braden is a rare blend of scientist, visionary, and scholar with the ability to speak to our minds while touching the wisdom of our hearts. He's a New York Times bestseller, and he is with us today talking about all kinds of things. And Greg, that is the thing about you. You touch on so many topics and you seem to understand them at such a great depth. I didn't know where to start with this interview, because there was just so much I would have wanted to talk about, like you said at the beginning of the show. But you seem to have read my mind, that I wanted to talk about the competition aspect. But the fact that you focused on that, I thought, oh, interesting, he's reading my mind, made me think of number four, which is that there is no... you're not reading my mind. There is no mind. We're the same mind. So there's no space between us. Could you explain what I'm thinking?
Sure. Thank you for
that. Could you tell me what I'm thinking?
You know, I mean, science is simply, it's a way of looking at our world and thinking about our world. So I'm just going to do a little preamble here before we go into this.
Okay.
Science, we don't have to know the science, and, you know, as complex as these things sound, they're really just about life. Life in every day, and we tend to break life down into these little compartmentalized segments so that we can deal with them. When we're having these conversations, you know, when I'm on your program, and I think that your listeners are probably largely what I would call the choir. These are people that have already embraced many of these ideas, have lived them in their lives, and many of these truths are obvious to our listeners. And I love the choir. The choir is vital to helping our world through a transformation unlike any that we've ever seen. And we also know that the kind of change we're being asked to make, Filippo, is it's going to take way more than the choir to make this change. We have to reach well beyond the choir into mainstream. And the only way that I have found to do that in our Western way of thinking and living is through a language that is trusted, respected, and relied upon. And for me, that happens to be the language of science. So we talk about the science. It doesn't have to be technical, but they're scientific principles that are help us to know what's true and what's not, what works and what doesn't. We all know there's a lot of new thought, ideas out there that range. I mean, they run the gamut. Some of them are pretty out there. I mean, we all know that. Mm-hmm. And so the science helps us know what's real and what's not. And the things that aren't real, let's don't do them anymore. Let's not put our energy into them. And the things that are, we can really focus on those and enhance them. And as we share these life-affirming ideas beyond the choir, as we share them in mainstream, it is because it's done responsibly through a language, a common language of science, that we stack the deck in our favor, and more people are willing to embrace a very, very different way of thinking. And I'm the first to acknowledge that. I was raised, born and raised in a very conservative community in northern Missouri. Nobody told me, you know, that nature is based on a model of cooperation and mutual aid. Nobody told me that everything is connected. I learned just the opposite. And I think we all have. Either consciously or subconsciously, we've been led to believe we live in a world of scarcity and that life is all about struggle. And if we don't get out there and do our part, we're going to get left behind. So that's a mindset. And the world is changing so quickly right now. The world of the past no longer exists. And people that are struggling are those that are trying to apply what they learned in the past to a world where it doesn't fit. So we don't live, for example, in isolated countries anymore, or a world of isolated economies or technologies or energy or defense or communications. And that means everything that we've done in our lives, the way we think about money, our jobs, our careers, spirituality, religion, medicine, health, security, all of that has changed. Nobody's really told us that. So for so many people that I'm seeing struggle, they're struggling to get back the world that no longer exists. And if we can let that world go and embrace these deep truths that tell us that that we are part of one another, we are part of this earth, that we are connected, and that the choices we make in one place influence what's happening somewhere else, that civilization is cyclic. If we can learn from those who have come before us, learn from their mistakes, things that they didn't do well, let's don't do those. The things that work for them, let's do a lot of them. And solve the problems, the great problems of the world, by working together rather than feeling like we've got to fight for our slice of the pie. That changes everything, Felipe. So this is the reason that I'm using the language of science. And if it sounds complex, it's as complex as we choose to make it, because I think life is actually very simple. So these five assumptions that I've shared are examples of the way we've been led to think about ourselves and our relationship to the world. So every problem that we ever have, personally, individually, collectively, families, communities, nations, we're always going to solve them through the lens of the way we think about ourselves. And this is why the new discoveries, I think, are so vitally important now, to share them and let people know, in fact, what I think many of us feel intuitively. I think intuitively we know that we're better when we work together. We know that. We know that we're stronger communities and stronger families and nations when we work together. So this is simply the science bearing out, in fact, what we already sense and suspect in our lives. And as we move forward in this this global transformation, I think this is the key. We don't want to just survive this transformation. We want to transcend, to become better people, stronger families and communities and nations on the other side of the great change. And I think these assumptions and others like them, I think these are the keys. So I just wanted to kind of share that as we go into the rest of the program, to kind of bridge what we just did with what we're about to do.
Yes, and Greg, I love your beyond the choir that you talk about. And to that point, and to the point of competition, this actually just came up this morning in a conversation with a friend that says, don't you realize that literally the word competition came up through the word, through competition? That's how products are made better. That's how people are encouraged to be better than somebody else. And we have advanced because of it. And sure, if we didn't have that, and if we didn't have this other thing that came up, money, that we have to make money, we would all just be sloths on couches. How do you speak to that? So beyond the choir.
That's a beautiful segue. We need to talk about, distinguish. There are different kinds of competition. And we talk about this in the book, certainly in the live programs, and in the time constraints of a radio program. I don't even know if I'm doing it justice or not. But when we think about competition, there is one form of competition where one individual benefits at the expense of another. It's a form of competition where we exploit the weakness of another for personal gain. So we benefit and someone else at someone else's expense. That's one form of competition. In biology, that's a form of what's called violent competition. okay? And there's another form of competition where we excel because we develop the capabilities or we develop the attributes personally without exploiting the weakness of another. We simply do what we do is the best that we can do it. So your friend talking about competition, that kind of competition, I would agree. I think when we develop an innovative technology or strategy or a product by opening the door to new ways of thinking and new materials, new systems, that's very different than exploiting the weakness of another product or and people that do that, they simply, that kind of competition typically doesn't bode well. And that's a lot of what's happening in the corporations right now. That's why people are so angry. Corporations are failing. It's all about the money. It's all about, a lot of it's about greed. So there are different kinds of competition. And what the science is showing is that violent competition, 400 peer-reviewed scientific studies were published late 90s, early 2000s. And they asked the question, what is the optimum amount of competition, of violent competition, in any environment? So in the classroom, in the workplace, in the playing field, what is the optimum amount? And all 400 studies came back and showed that the number was zero.
Wow.
That violent competition always is detrimental to the individual. It's always detrimental to the community. That nature is based upon this model of cooperation. And what is called, in biological terms, is called mutual aid, not violent competition. Now, we all know that violent competition happens. We don't need to look any further than, the 6 o'clock news to see it happening. What I think is important here is to recognize that it is an aberration of our truest nature and that our world is so skewed that aberration has become commonly accepted. We believe that is the way life is, rather than seeing it as an aberration. This is where I'm going to go back to these deep truths. This is so beautiful to bring these together. The science is showing us nature is based on this model of cooperation. Civilization, the archaeology, is now showing us as we look into these ancient advanced civilizations, now twice as old is what we've been led to believe is the age of civilization itself,
right?
Modern civilization. One of the mysteries that has been common to all of the sites that are found, whether they're in South America, in northern Peru, whether they're in Egypt, whether they're in India, or whether they're in Turkey, or any of the other sites, some of them I didn't even mention. The mystery is that there no weapons have been found, no evidence of any weapons, no evidence of large-scale war, no evidence of the need to defend, no evidence of the need to defend homes by building walls or moats, no need of the evidence to defend cities by building walls or moats, or no large-scale graves, mass graves that you would expect after large wars, no mutilated bodies and mutilated skeletons that we see historically after large-scale war in the past. So what the anthropologists and the archaeologists are beginning to suspect is that war is not human nature, but it is an aberration. It's a habit that was developed about 5,000 years ago. Interestingly, that's the biblical era when our biblical text was written, the modern Western Bible. Interestingly, that is when we're told that civilization began with ancient Sumeria. So this is what the science is telling us. Now, when we move beyond the science, here's the context. Is the oral traditions of our indigenous ancestors almost universally say that civilization is cyclic. We're living a cycle. It's a cycle that is typified by suffering and by war. Before our cycle was another cycle that was called the cycle of a golden age. The archaeology now seems to support that. And what makes it very relevant to today is that we are at the end of a great cycle that began 5,000 years ago. Based on astronomical alignments and beginning a new cycle. And the question asked by the indigenous ancestors, the question asked in the texts, and the question we're asking ourselves today is, are we going to move into this new cycle carrying the same principles of war and suffering that we have become accustomed to? Or do we go into a new cycle where we turn away from war as a way to solve our problems, where we learn that cooperation is our truest nature, as it has been in the past? So this is where the context is so important. The principles are interesting in and of themselves, but when we look at them within the big context of our world today, all of a sudden a lot of things, lights start to go off everywhere, because I think intuitively we all sense that that war is not the way to solve the problems. There's a great song about that that I could actually sing for you right now, but but I think we
would you
now the science is giving us a reason to apply in our lives what we intuitively sense in our hearts, and I think this is where the rubber meets the road. It's where the spiritual rubber of what we claim to be true for us in our hearts meets the road of the real world. And if we were ever going to apply these principles in our lives, now is a really good time, because we are at this place that so many have called the tipping point, where the unsustainable systems of economics, of energy usage, of resource exploitation, and the way that we share things like medicine and food and technology, based on the old ideas, they have reached this limit. We're up against this wall. Harvard biologist E.O. Wilson calls it the bottleneck in time. He identified this time in 2005. He said, this is where we are, where these things are no longer sustainable. So the question is, coming out from the other side of the bottleneck, do we mimic the systems of the past that we already know are going to fail, or do we embrace the deepest truths of our existence as we build the new systems? So now to your friend, what your friend was saying, I think competition and competition in the industry and the markets, I think capitalism is probably a good system. It's worked in the past. It's all about how it's done, though. This is the thing. And if it's done from a place of greed and corruption, we know where that leads. If it's done from a place where we respect these principles, I think it'd be the most powerful system on the face of the earth. We've seen that in the past. Mm. So it's our opportunity to apply these, what some people call are deeply spiritual and certainly scientific principles, in our everyday lives and in a very real way.
Greg, unfortunately, we're coming quickly to our time here, real quickly, the song that you referenced, that was written by a friend of yours, and it's the one you showed live at the event? Is that the one?
Well, the one I had in mind was by Edwin Starr. It was called War, What Is It Good For?
Oh, yes.
I could sing a few bars of that, but the one that you are referencing, Sean Galloway, I know many of our listeners are familiar with this. Sean Galloway has written a beautiful song and produced a video to go with this, reminding us of the choices that we're all making in our lives right now. And as complex as everything that we're talking about may sound today, it all boils down to the question, are we going to choose competition or cooperation? What we're really asking is, do we choose love or fear? Mm. And that is what this this film is all about, and it's called I Choose Love. It's on YouTube. You just go to YouTube and do a search on I Choose Love, and you can see this beautiful film.
Okay.
So I know we have just a few minutes left, and can I say something in closing here?
Please, please.
You know, we covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, and I know for many people it's a very different way of thinking, and for others it's right on board with what they've always embraced. For me, what it comes down to every day, and many, many problems do cross my path every day, the way I go about solving those problems and knowing these deep truths has invited me personally to shift a great question in my life. We've all been led to ask the question, what can I get from the world that exists? Consciously or subconsciously, that's the way we think. What's in this for me? What can I get from the world that exists? If we can make the subtle shift into asking, what can I give to the world that is emerging? What do I have to offer in this situation? That subtle shift opens the door to a plethora of new ways of thinking and living and being, and I think that's where the change begins.
Hmm. Could you say that again differently, Greg?
What can I get from the world that exists is what we've been led to believe about our relationship to the world. If we can make a subtle shift from that thinking into the new thinking that simply asks, what can I give to the world that's emerging? What can I give? What skill set? What way of thinking? What do I have to offer in this situation that's emerging? That's a huge difference, and it's a subtle shift from what can I get to what can I give. And if we can make that shift, and these discoveries, the deep truth, give us the reason to make that shift. They give us the reason to recognize that we don't live in a world of scarcity unless that's the world we want to make. And that there isn't one pie, there are many pies and many slices of many pies, but it's all about the way we think in terms of our relationship to the problems that cross our paths as individuals, as families, as communities, as nations, as a planet. So it's just a matter of scale and magnitude. So it all comes down for me to that subtle shift. What what can I give to the world that's emerging rather than me saying, what's in it for me? What can I get from the world that exists?
Wow. And what a shift that is, and what a shift that would make if more and more of us do that. And hopefully, thanks to this show and you being on it, that can happen more readily. Greg, this has been truly a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Well, Filippo, I've really enjoyed our time together. You know, I am not surprised, but I'm always in awe at how quickly the time passes.
Indeed, indeed.
Well, our hour has passed very quickly, so I look forward to the next time. And
indeed,
just scratched the surface.
Indeed, for all humanity. Thank you, Greg. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, you as well, and all of our listeners. Bye bye.
All right, bye bye. The books are Deep Truth, The God Code, The Divine Matrix, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, and Fractal Time. You can get them on Amazon and all over. And you can learn more about Greg at www.gregbraden.com. That's Greg with two G's, G-R-E-G-G, Braden.com. And we'll be back with Mark Legere and our producer's wrap right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back after a great interview with Greg Braden. This is the Producer's Wrap with our producer, Mark Legere. Mark.
What a great discussion. Wow. You know, Greg is a favorite, obviously, and for the reasons you mentioned at the outset of your background from IBM and engineering education and whatnot. You know, I have a similar lineage, at least in my professional career, having worked with a number of those companies. You know, you mentioned Martin Marietta, you know, and I functioned with executives from, you know, Lockheed, Raytheon, ITT, all these companies. And that experience, those experiences coupled with my own inward journey led to that, to a similar appreciation for what Greg does and how he sees the world in terms of validating it from a kind of a scientific perspective.
Yeah. And yet, And yet all that science leads him to his last words, which are, what instead of what can I get, what can I do? And interestingly enough, it's very reminiscent to me of the John F. Kennedy speech, the famous one, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. You could almost just substitute world for that.
Well, you know, you're striking the chord of a much deeper discussion. You know, all this science is really just an effort to unwind the programming that based on lack of knowledge or ignorance of factual evidence. You know, I point to a number of these things, and he's mentioned a few of them today, that it shocks me that people just refuse to explore them further or to accept them, like the monolithic structures, like the new archaeological discoveries. You know, there's just a mountain of evidence that's right in front of us, the challenges, and there's the key word, challenges conventional wisdom. And people just refuse to have their conventional wisdom challenged. And yet all of this debate goes back to that central theme of giving versus receiving. And I think the whole basis of our consumer and material-driven world is based on receiving as opposed to giving. And yes, a subtle shift. But the minute you shift that, it's think of going with the stream, right? Going with the flow, giving as opposed to receiving. If you're going with the flow, that's different than taking and going against and going upstream. And it's just a fundamental shift, a subtle shift, but fundamental in terms of its impact.
You mentioned the monoliths, and to me it was almost as monolithic when you mentioned the 400 peer-reviewed studies or scientific papers that we're looking for the answer to the question, how much competition, a violent competition, is good competition, and they all came back as zero. And I couldn't wait to talk to you about this, because I knew you would have something to add to this, because growing up, he said we think that competition is right. We are so taught, and we even are taught games like tug of war. And he talked about war, of course. So this competition thing is inbred in us from childhood.
Well, it's inbred in us from childhood. But I think even more important than that, yes, I did take note of the 400 peer-reviewed studies. But then you go beyond that and you look at the lack. I think what is so telling is the lack of evidence of warfare in these historic finds.
Yeah.
The lack of evidence, you know, of you know, mass graves or mutilated, all the things he was highlighting. You know, then you bring it into modern day society where we are brought up with this. Tom and Jerry and cartoons and the Bugs Bunny cartoons and the bombing and the Simity Sam and the shooting. I mean, you think about it, you go back to what, you and I were brought up with, much less today's very graphic, very three-dimensional, very realistic, warfare games, you know, that are interactive and online and real time. And, you know, we're brought up, we're trained in warfare from birth, as opposed to being trained in creative collaboration.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I wanted to ask him to that point is, he's really good at not blaming, because obviously that doesn't serve. And I know that he's focused towards moving towards the future and the positive. And he's also one of these people that subscribes to what we believe can happen. So every thought has an effect. So So if we're not going to blame, then the question is, all right, so who's creating these games, et cetera, et cetera? Are they just part of the cycle? Is this their job in this cycle? And then in this new cycle that's starting now, after the tipping point, then it's our job to do what we're doing.
Well, you know, and I don't believe there is any blame. You know, I don't think that there is a recognition or an acknowledgement of right or wrong. If you're brought up in that environment, if you're brought up to believe or enjoy or play or be stimulated by this type of competition, that's all you know, you're going to create more of that, especially if you're being rewarded billions and billions and billions of dollars by creating the next best game, the next best competition, et cetera. So now, if you step back from that for just a moment and you take the blame game away and you just put it back to the simple statement that he gave, which is moving from a take mentality to a give mentality, that changes the entire game. But I think there is, obviously, there's a social programming that's going to have to happen. And that social program, it can only happen the more that people become aware of the fact that tolerating that or allowing that to continue to propagate, the old way of doing things, isn't working. And the more it doesn't work, the more that this type of thing starts to come to come to light. I think one of the notable analogies would be, I can't remember the suburb, but there's a suburb outside of Orlando where over 25% of kids, it was specifically focusing on kids, but kids are homeless. Mm. But what is happening is these kids, and of course the associated families, they're not all homeless on their own, but they were focused, the death study was focused on kids, and I was just staggered at the number. But it was looking at how these families were banding together and taking over small hotels and starting to create commune-like living. And the kids were very happy and very satisfied and felt very safe. And to me, there's perfect evidence of a shift in perspective. It became a give mentality as opposed to a take mentality. It wasn't a take who's got the bigger car, who's got the bigger property. I feel guilty because I'm not dressed as nice as the next kid. Shift that perspective to I'm happy to have a roof over my head. I'm happy we're all safe. We share the vacuum cleaner and the food and the whatever other resources that are there, and we're all happy now because we weren't happy when we were fighting to keep all this other stuff.
Mark, you bring up so many great points, and that's why I was looking forward to this discussion with you, and I wish we had so much more time. But just that point about the vacuum cleaner, I've wondered recently. I have so many friends and so many friends that have a lot, and I also have a lot of things. I even made a website once or put out an email saying, okay, I have these things. Does anybody need to borrow them, or does anybody need these? I don't. And I've been thinking. I wondered sometimes. Like, I don't need a drill, but maybe once a year. I think it'd be cool to ask a friend if I could borrow their drill. When in the way that I have felt society being, it's not cool. It's like, I keep my drill for, can't you afford your own one? What's wrong with you?
Well, let's think about it for just a second, because again, this is a shift in perspective. If we are sharing, the lawnmower, the drill, the whatever the case may be in our neighborhood, who's benefiting? And then who is not? Who is not are the handful of 2, 3, 4 corporations that are making those, that want to sell as many of those as possible and want to make sure everybody in that neighborhood continues to improve on what they have so they can buy the next newest one and continue that competition. Or everybody in that neighborhood who is sharing those gets everything that they need accomplished, doesn't have to spend extra income on more stuff, right, and are therefore thriving in many other aspects of their lives. So do we really have it figured out?
Well, yeah. And that reminds me, I used to have all my shirts dry cleaned every week, and I used to wear at least one a day. And I would save those hangers, those perfectly good metal hangers. And every week, I would, or once a month, I would take them to the dry cleaner. And the first time or the second time I did that, the owner was there. So I took the opportunity to say to her, look, you should have some kind of incentive for all of your customers to bring their hangers back because they're perfectly good. They're hardly used. I mean, and she looked at me awkwardly and embarrassed. And then when I went back there the next time, she said, and I saw her again, she said, boy, that was the wrong time for you to tell me that. The hanger salesman was standing right next to me. And I thought, well, I'm sorry for the hanger salesman, but maybe the hanger salesman needs to find something else to do. And maybe, you know, we all do. We all obviously have to find something else to do, a better something else. A better way.
Well, maybe the hanger salesman can institute a, you know, a trade back policy within his company, and who knows, you know, what you may have affected that day. But again, it's a simple shift in perspective. We get into habits, and then we rationalize these habits, and then we anchor them by continued behavior, and rationalize that because it's a continued behavior. So, you know, until you start to do something differently, which usually is not, it doesn't happen until you're forced to do it differently because you've lost something or you know, the job or the, you know, some sort of challenge has made you step out of your satisfied or comfort zone. You know, then you start relooking at these things and then you may be willing to take on a new perspective.
And I'm sitting here laughing, thinking, don't make me come hit you with a hanger. Change, people.
Right, exactly.
Well, who knows what effect I might have had on that day, and who knows what effect we have had on this day between our conversation and our conversation with Greg Braden and our show. So I particularly thank Dorothy Donahue for not only producing this show, but for bringing Greg Braden and his book into my awareness, forcing it in there. She almost had to hit me with a hanger, but thankfully she didn't resort to that. And I thank you, Mark, for producing this show as well. And our special engineer today, Doug Newson. I am Filippo Voltaggio, wishing you all a beautiful, positive day. Ciao, until next week.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Now's the time. Now's the time.